The first reading comes from Luke 1, chapter 1, verse 1 to 4, and is on page 1012. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, it seemed good almost to me to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. And the second reading is John 20, verse 24 to 31, on page 1075. Now Thomas, called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the nail marks in his hands, and put my fingers where the nails were, and put my hand into his side, I will not believe it." A week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came and stood among them, and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here, see my hands, reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe." Thomas said to him, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus said to him, "Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed." Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name.
Good everyone. My name is Peter. I'm one of the ministers here at St. David's, and it's great to see you all here. If you're here for the first time at 6:45, a particularly warm welcome to you. It's great that you could come, and hopefully we can catch up after the service finishes tonight. Tonight we begin a new sermon series all about Jesus, the Jesus that people met. Over the next 6 weeks at 6:45, we're going to be looking together at who Jesus is, and what he did, and what difference that makes to us. Now, to kick off the series, tonight I want us to think about a couple of introductory questions. The first one is, did Jesus really exist? And the second one is, if he did, how can we know what he was like? Now, it probably goes without saying that they are important questions. For one thing, Christianity is all about Jesus. Christianity is not a philosophical system. It's not all about abstract ideas. Christianity is not a moral code. It's not all about rules and regulations. Christianity is all about Jesus. And so these questions, did Jesus exist and how can we know what he was like, they're crucial questions. So let's have a look at them together tonight. First, did Jesus really exist? There are, of course, some people, not many, but some who believe that Jesus is a complete myth, that he never actually existed. So did he or not? Well, I want to say that Jesus did exist. And tonight, I want to give you two reasons why I think we can be certain about that. First, there is what we might call the direct evidence for Jesus' existence. In particular, all the ancient historical documents, the documents from the first century that refer to Jesus. You see, Jesus is not just mentioned in the Bible. There are actually many references to Jesus in the writings of Roman and Jewish scholars from the first century. Let me give you a couple of examples. The Greek historian Thales writing in about 55 AD, mentioned the eclipse that coincided with Jesus' death. The Stoic writer Mara Bar Serapion, writing just after 70 AD, talks about Jesus as a teacher and a martyr, and that he was regarded by some as a king. Tacitus, if you do ancient history at high school, or if you did, you may have come across Tacitus. He's often described as ancient Rome's greatest historian. Well, in his annals, Tacitus mentions both the death of Jesus and the growth of the Christian movement. Pliny the Younger, who wrote around the same time as Tacitus, talks about how people in the first century worshipped Jesus as God. And one last example, Josephus, the Jewish historian, who wrote in the middle of the first century. He actually mentions Jesus at two different points in his famous work, The Jewish Antiquities. Josephus refers to Jesus as a wise man, as a doer of startling deeds, as a teacher who had a large following. And Josephus makes reference to Jesus' death under Pontius Pilate and to the Christians who continued to follow him after that. Now, let me say again, none of these writers were Christians. Now, they were historians or scholars who lived in the first century, but none of them were Christians, and yet they all refer to Jesus. And there are other examples as well. And then, of course, there are the New Testament documents themselves. Friends, the direct historical evidence for Jesus' existence is overwhelming. And that's the first reason why I think we can be certain that Jesus existed. But there's another reason as well. The second reason why we can be sure that Jesus existed is what we might call the indirect evidence for Jesus' existence. You see, Jesus has made a massive impact on history. And we can see that impact. Within just a few decades of Jesus' life, Christianity had spread throughout the Mediterranean. Today, it's spread throughout the world. There are more books written about Jesus than anyone else in history. There are more movies made about Jesus than James Bond. There are more songs that have been sung about Jesus. There are more paintings that have been commissioned of him, more poems that have been composed about him than anyone else in history. Jesus is the most famous person who ever lived. And Jesus' teaching, that's shaped philosophy and education and politics and literature and our legal system. In fact, Jesus is such a massive figure in our history that our history is divided into the years before his birth, the years BC, and the years after his birth, the years AD, even if we do have our calculations slightly off. H.G. Wells wrote this about Jesus. A historian like myself, who doesn't even call himself a Christian, finds the picture centering irresistibly around the life and character of this most significant man. No one could write a history of the human race without giving him the first and foremost place. The way that Jesus has shaped history is staggering. And that's not even to mention the personal impact that Jesus has had on literally hundreds of millions of lives, including many lives of people in this room tonight. Friends, Jesus has had a massive impact on history, and we can see that impact. And that impact is very difficult to explain if Jesus never existed. If you take Jesus out of history, you are left with a massive, inexplicable hole. That's the indirect evidence for Jesus' existence. It's a bit like a boat on a river. A couple of months ago, my wife Paula and I took a holiday on the Hawkesbury River. We were staying right on the river. It was awesome. It's a great week. Every now and then, massive boats would come past. Now, how did we know that a boat had come past? Well, we could see the boat and we could hear it. That you could say, was the direct evidence for the boat. But also, as a boat went past, it left behind it a large wake. That was the indirect evidence of the boat. Friends, Jesus has left a massive wake in history. And that wake is impossible to explain if Jesus never existed. How do we know that Jesus existed? Well, we have the direct evidence for his existence in those ancient documents from the first century, and we have the indirect evidence from the impact he's had on the world. Friends, in the end, I don't think there's any doubt about it that Jesus existed. He did. He's a real person who lived in history. So that brings us to our second question. Now, we know that Jesus existed, but how can we know what he was like? I mean, he lived 2,000 years ago. So how can we know what he was like? Well, the good news is that because Jesus existed in history, we can know what he's like by looking at the historical evidence. That's one of the unique things about Christianity. Christianity is historical. It's not lost in the fog of mythology and prehistory. Jesus lived at a certain time in a certain place, and so we can find out what he's like by looking at the historical evidence. In other words, by looking at those first century documents that talk about Jesus. Now, as I mentioned, there's a number of references to Jesus in the documents of non-Christian people like Tacitus and Josephus. And when we put all those references together, we're left with a bit of a sketch of who Jesus was. We can find out, for example, where Jesus lived and when. We learn that he was called the Christ, that he was known for doing startling deeds, that he was a teacher with a large following, that he was crucified under Pontius Pilate, and that his followers claim to have seen him risen from the dead. We learn all of that from those non-Christian sources. But on their own, those non-Christian sources really just give us an outline, a bare sketch of Jesus. If we want more detail about who he is and what he did, well, we have to turn to the documents that we find in the New Testament, the New Testament section of our Bible. That's the major source for our information about Jesus. Now, for some people, that's the issue. They feel like they can't trust the New Testament. The actress Winona Ryder once said this: "I've read the Bible. It's a great book, but it's a novel. It's just fiction." And I reckon that that is a fairly common view. I reckon that there'd be lots of people, perhaps even some people in this room here tonight, who think that the Bible is a good book, it's got good stuff in it, but you can't trust it as historically accurate. For one thing, the New Testament was written by Christians, by followers of Jesus. And for some people, that's reason enough to doubt its accuracy. But as we saw in that video earlier on tonight, historians would disagree with that. Just because it's written by Christians does not automatically mean that it's not historically reliable. We can't just assume that. Instead, we need to test its historicity, just as we would with any other ancient document. And when we do that, I think we find that there are some very good reasons for treating the New Testament as historically accurate. Now, tonight we're just focusing on the Gospels, and I want to give you five reasons why I think we can trust that the Gospels are historically reliable. Five reasons that we can trust the Gospels. First, the Gospels were written very soon after Jesus' life. There are some people who say you can't trust the Gospels because they are written hundreds of years after Jesus. That's simply not true. For one thing, the Gospels are quoted in other books and letters that were written at the end of the first century. And so we know that the Gospels were written well before that. In fact, there's good evidence that the Gospels were written about 30 or 40 years after Jesus' life. Now, in ancient history terms, that's a very short period of time. Now, let me give you another example. The earliest surviving biographies of Alexander the Great were written more than 400 years after his death. So 30 or 40 years is not a long time. But more importantly, that short space of time means that the Gospels were written and circulated while eyewitnesses who had seen Jesus were still alive. And so if what the Gospel said was nonsense, people would have known. People would have remembered that that's not what happened. And they would have pointed it out, and Christianity would never have gotten off the ground. It's a bit like this. Imagine that you got the newspaper today. I imagine that would be fairly unusual. But you got the newspaper, and in the newspaper, there was an article about the Sydney Olympics, the Olympics from the year 2000. And in the article, the writer was saying how surprising he thought it was that the track and field events for the Sydney Olympics were held at Melwood Oval in Forestville. Now, what do you think would happen in response to that article? Well, I reckon that anyone who'd been to the track and field at the Olympics would know that that was nonsense. I went to the track and field one night at the Olympics. Now, I was a long way back. In fact, I was in that section of the grandstand where you have to take a tablet to avoid altitude sickness. But nevertheless, I was not so far back that I couldn't tell that I wasn't at Melwood Oval. People would know that article was complete nonsense. Well, it's the same with the Gospels. Because they were written so early, when people who had seen Jesus were still alive, if what they said was nonsense, people would have known. And Christianity would never have gotten off the ground. We can trust the gospel accounts of Jesus' life because they were written so early. A second reason why we can trust the gospel accounts as historically reliable is that they were written by people who were eyewitnesses or by people who had spoken with eyewitnesses to Jesus. So, for example, John's gospel. One of the passages that Ben read for us was from the Gospel of John. John was one of Jesus' apostles. He saw Jesus with his own eyes. He heard Jesus with his own ears. He touched Jesus. And in his gospel, John wrote down what he saw and heard. Another example, the other passage that Ben read for us was from Luke's gospel. Now, Luke's gospel was a bit different. Luke himself was not an eyewitness. But in order to write the gospel, he spoke to eyewitnesses. Let's have a look again at that passage that Ben read for us. This is from the start of Luke's gospel. It's up on the screen. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, it seemed good also to me to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. You see what Luke's saying there? Luke was diligent in his research. He carefully investigated all the facts. He spoke to eyewitnesses. He wanted to make sure that what he was writing was true, so that his readers could know with certainty what happened. Here is Luke's answer to the question, how can we know what Jesus was like? How can we know what Jesus was like? By reading Luke's gospel. And we can know that Luke's gospel is reliable because it was based on the account of eyewitnesses. Friends, the gospels, they are not speculation from a distance. They are eyewitness testimony. When we read the gospels, we are hearing from people who personally met Jesus. And we need to remember that a number of those eyewitnesses were killed for what they were saying about Jesus. They were executed. And so it's impossible to believe that they just made this stuff up. It's one thing to die for something that you think is true, but who would die for something that they know is false? Who would die for something that they know they'd made up? A third reason why we can trust the gospel accounts as historically accurate is because they contain a number of unusual, even embarrassing details, particularly about those who wrote them. Now, when you read the gospels, the apostles, the eyewitnesses, they come out of it looking, well, foolish and sometimes even cowardly. So, for example, all of the gospels record how Peter denied Jesus three times and how the other apostles ran away when Jesus was arrested. Now, if the Gospels were just made up by the apostles, why would they include those details? And there's lots of other examples like that, strange events, embarrassing details, and the only reason you would include them is because they happened, and you were determined to report what happens. We can trust that the Gospels are historically accurate because they contain all those strange and embarrassing details. A fourth reason why we can trust the gospel accounts is because that there are many incidental details in the gospels that have been confirmed by archaeology or by other sources. What's more, as the Jewish archaeologist Nelson Gluck has written, there has never been any archaeological discoveries that contradict the Gospels. One of the world's most celebrated archaeologists is a Scottish guy named William Ramsay. William Ramsay set out to compare what Luke had written with what was known about that time in history from other sources. Now, he was skeptical. He didn't think what Luke had written was of much historical value at all. But at the end of his research, his opinion had completely changed. And in the end, he described Luke like this. These are his words. Luke is an historian of the first rank, among the very greatest of historians. Now, we can trust that the Gospels are historically accurate, because there are many incidental details in the Gospels that have been confirmed, corroborated by other sources. Well, one last reason why we can trust the Gospels as historically accurate is because we have so many ancient manuscripts of the New Testament. That is, copies of the New Testament. We have more copies of the New Testament than any other ancient document. In fact, we have more than 20,000 ancient copies of the New Testament. That compares to less than 10 existing manuscripts of Plato's writings. Now, one of the implications of this is that we can see how accurately the Bible has been copied and translated over the years. Perhaps you've heard people say you can't trust the Bible because it's been changed over history. Have you ever heard anyone say that? It's not true. We keep finding more and more manuscripts and older manuscripts, and all of these manuscripts go to show that the Gospels have not been changed over time. Friends, at the end of the day, there is plenty of evidence that the Gospel accounts of Jesus' life are accurate history. In fact, among professional ancient historians, the Gospels are widely regarded as the earliest, most plentiful, and most reliable sources of information about Jesus. And so if we want to know what Jesus was like, we need to read the Gospels. And how can we know what Jesus was like? By reading the Gospels. And over the next 6 weeks here at 6:45, that is exactly what we're going to do. We're going to look together at what the Gospels teach us about who Jesus is and what he did and what difference that makes to us. You see, there are a lot of different versions of Jesus around. Jesus has been called a political revolutionary, a magician, a religious guru, even an alien whose descendants are currently plotting to take over Europe. And among all of those varied, bizarre suggestions, there's one thing in common. They all ignore what the Gospels say about Jesus. They ignore the Jesus of history. And friends, that is who we are interested in. Unfortunately, so many people just make up their own version of Jesus, a Jesus that suits them. I think the most striking example of this actually comes from the Second World War. Around the time of the Second World War, there were some Nazi scholars who began to claim that Jesus was not in fact Jewish. He was an Aryan. He was a descendant of a German legionnaire. How convenient. Now, that's an extreme example, but I think it illustrates how far we will sometimes go to come up with a version of Jesus that suits us. But friends, Jesus existed in history. He is a real figure. We can't just make up our own version of Jesus. If we want to know what Jesus was like, we need to read the Gospels and see what they say about him. And that is what we're going to do over the next 6 weeks. We're going to look together at the Jesus of the Gospels, the Jesus of history, the Jesus that people met. And as we do that, we will find that Jesus is an astonishing figure. There's nobody else like him. There never has been. There never will be. He is incomparable. Jesus is a towering figure, far more interesting than any of the imaginary versions of Jesus that we hear about in the modern media. Jesus challenges us and comforts us. He is both deeply credible and profoundly counterintuitive. That is the Jesus that we meet in the pages of the Gospels. And friends, as we read the Gospels, we find that this Jesus of history is more than just a person from the past. He is alive now. and he can change our lives forever. And so with that in mind, let me finish tonight by inviting you to do a couple of things. First, can I invite you to read a gospel? Perhaps you could start with Luke's gospel. We read a few verses from the start of Luke's gospel tonight, so you're off to a start. Why not keep reading through Luke this week? If you don't have a copy of the Bible in modern English at home, please feel free to take a copy of Luke's gospel with you. Under the seats in front of you, we've got a whole lot of copies of The Essential Jesus, which is just a version of Luke's gospel. Please feel free to take one of those if you would like and begin to read through it this week. Second, can I invite you to ask questions? If you've got questions about what I've been talking about tonight, about Jesus, about the Bible, please feel free to come and ask me after the service tonight, or ask Scotty, or ask someone that you came with. We'd love to chat with you about it. At the end of the service, I'll just hang around down the front here. If you've got questions or things that you want to say, please come and speak to us. And third and finally, can I invite you to come back next week? Next week, we're going to look together at Jesus' teaching, at what he taught, and what that tells us about who he is and the difference it makes for us. It would be great to see you all here again next week. Well, let me hand it back to Scotty. Thanks, Scotty.